Welcome to the Start Me Up podcast, part of MSW Media and the Sexy Liberal Podcast Network. I'm your host, Kimberly Johnson in D.C. Today, my returning guest is the author of Saving Democracy, David Pepper. We have a lot to cover, so before we get into it, the Start Me Up podcast is independent, listener-funded, and woman-run. Visit patreon.com/startmeup to see the variety of tiers offered, including the option to get a bonus What's Up episode every Tuesday. It's kind of like my online journal where I get a little more personal and I talk about whatever's on my mind. There's also an ad-free tier with a much shorter intro. Just visit patreon.com/startmeup. Please enjoy my conversation with David Pepper. Welcome back to the show, David.
Thanks. Great to be back with you.
Well, it's been a little while, and I know that there's some crazy news going on. So we have a lot to talk about today. So I don't know. Let's just start off with the fact that tonight is the State of the Union. So, of course, everybody's talking about that online. I want to know what you would like to hear from the president and what do you think we will hear from him?
So obviously he's got a ton to do in one State of the Union. I hope we see sort of the pugnacious personality we saw a year ago. I think, you know, there's all this talk about his age and can he do it and all that. Well, his State of the Union last year was, I thought, really strong. And the fact that he ad-libbed and kind of threw shade at Republicans and when they booed him, he responded. I thought that was really important, even though it was probably the more silly parts. Like, that personality, I think, people have a short memory, so it got forgotten. But I actually thought that was one of the best things he's done when he wasn't just sitting there and reading from a teleprompter. So if they're able to, you know, do that again in whatever way, great. I was joking on Twitter that he should take credit for ending that out-of-control pill mill that he inherited when he got to the White House. That this Ron Jackson? I mean, it's insane. Right, yeah. So kind of maybe just being a little more of that personality, I think, really helps Joe Biden feel like, you know, he can do it, and he's not just reading, but he's actually throwing some personality and some jabs. On a more serious note, though, and I wrote something about this today in the Atlanta Journal Constitution, you know, I have no doubt he's going to talk about democracy tonight, and he should. But my hope is, and I wrote about this today in several ways, I think he needs to go further than just that the democracy battle is simply him versus Trump, because I think that's not really that's not the picture. The picture is actually much deeper, much broader. It's all these states that are gerrymandered. It's extremism in these states. It's the voter suppression. It's the censoring of history. And what I like about him drawing that bigger picture is it starts to connect the dots about all that's happening at once, you know, the attack on democracy, the extremism, IVF, abortion bans, they're all connected if you actually paint the picture broadly enough. When you make it only about Trump, you actually leave this very simplistic impression that if only Trump disappeared, it would all go away, and it won't. And I just think it's actually a moment, if all of America is listening, to get that right. And what I like about that is it actually brings all of America into the Democratic battle, the pro-democracy battle, not just the swing states that get all the attention, but all of them. It shows people that you don't just turn out this year for Joe Biden against Trump. You turn out for state house races. So it gives people a reason to care about this year's election, even if they aren't sold on Joe Biden yet. And he's got to make sure they are. So I just think that he needs to draw a much broader picture of what's happening in democracy. This doesn't take that long. I mean, I do it almost every day. But I actually think at the federal level, him laying that out, I think, is important for the American people to hear it. But I also think it accomplishes some goals that he needs to accomplish, like getting people energized all over the country, not just in a few places, like seeing that they should turn out not just for his race, but for all the races up and down the ballot. So I think that's, to me, of many things he's going to do. I'm sorry, there's one other thing I would say he should do that I just don't think – and I think Chris Hayes talked about this last night. I think that they've gotten so understandably frustrated that they're not getting credit for good things they've done that they spend most of their time just defending their record. But elections are about the future. You remember when Clinton said bridge to the 21st century. I mean, whether or not you like that – his reelection wasn't just, I did this, this, and this. It was, here's what I'm going to do next. And I think especially for young people who clearly aren't where they need to be for Biden yet and others, I think he's got to lay out what he's going to do in the second term better than he has so far. And I think that's another big challenge for him tonight to do that, and also the campaign to then follow up with that. If all you're doing is saying we've done this and that and everything's great, that's not a campaign. I mean, I think you have to also pivot. Okay, what's next? What are the exciting things that you are going to do in the next 4 years versus the terrible things we know Trump will do? I think for a State of the Union, that's a perfect time to lay that out.
Interesting, and I think there's a decent chance that he's going to do it. And I've seen some promising good polls, and I'm just going to stress this because I see so many people out there saying, you know, polls are shit or whatever. And a lot of the polls are shit, but not all of them are. It just depends on how they're conducted. It depends on, you know, how much money is spent on them, you know, what kind of names, how old the list is, how many people they've talked to, if they, you know, if they followed up. So it really bothers me when I see people just dismissing polls altogether, because there are some really good polls out there. And some of the ones, I like to follow Simon Rosenberg, and I think it was in January, or it might have been in February, he put up a YouGov poll where 71% of Gen Zers had a favorable opinion of Biden. Right. So obviously not everyone is, you know, 100% behind him. I think our country is sadly, you know, the way that information is put out there now, it's different than it was 50 years ago. It's not one main source of news that everyone relies on. So everybody's getting their news and their opinions from different sources.
Right.
And so, you know, I mean, now this just brings me, I'm going to talk a little bit about how the media frames everything, but I want to first start with Super Tuesday. I want to know just what your takeaway was from Super Tuesday.
Well, if I can say one quick thing that Simon also talks about that I totally agree on is, if there's a bad poll, Trump can win. We should take that seriously. So I don't really dismiss any of them, but the thing that I care more about than polls is the last year and a half where Democrats have overperformed and won again and again and again. And every single time, going back to Kansas in August of 22, through Ohio all last year, to Tom Suozzi flipping, to Wisconsin Supreme Court, better than polls are results, and the results are phenomenal, and they're coming out of two things. One, the right is too extreme for most America. That's why election denier candidates running for Secretary of State lost all over the place in 22. That's why Moms of Liberty candidates got crushed last November. But there's also, not only are they too extreme, but we have an army of grassroots activists who are pushing turnout. And that's why you saw Suozzi win by more than people expected, or some of these other results. So I think even better than polls lately has been actual results of consistent overperformance that actually is happening in years where we're supposed to lose because we have the White House. We've been winning. So that's what I'd say. I don't dismiss the polls, but I also take great, you know, I'm boosted by the idea that when it came to Election Day, we've had this incredible winning streak for democracy going back a year and a half now.
Yeah. I mean, well, and if you really look at it, I think that Democrats have been winning since Trump entered office, because 2017, the first election we saw, especially that Virginia election, we saw all these women and LGBT and you know, people winning, and it's been like that. It's been consistent. Democrats have been doing a good job. And I think we continue to improve as far as messaging. I mean, the Biden HQ Twitter account and Threads account is just fantastic, whoever is running that. And I think, you know, I mean, there's a lot of critique about Democratic messaging, but I do believe that the Democratic messaging has gotten better. And I would like to just remind listeners that usually the messaging, especially from the right, is not coming so much from the party. It's coming from outside groups. And that's kind of the same. We have the same thing on our side. We've got, you know, the Midas Touch. We've got different groups or individuals that are very influential. People like you, people like Simon, people like Allison Gill, talking about and framing, you know, things the Democrats are doing in a way that makes it easy for everybody to understand. And so I just want to throw that out there, that I think Democratic messaging has been pretty good. But I think what we're fighting against is the messaging we're hearing on the mainstream media, because it's so much of it is focusing on the fact that, or I should say, so much of it is kind of normalizing Trump and Trumpism. And I'm going to ask you about that in one second, but I quickly want to just I saw this tweet from Christopher Boozy, and I want to see what you have to say about it. But he said, because now he was accurate, just like with Simon, he was accurate in 2022 mm-hmm. with what he called. And so he says, I've analyzed Super Tuesday election data and exit polls, and all I can say is a bunch of folks in the media are getting high on their own supply. I now have North Carolina going to Biden and several glaring red flags to make Florida a toss-up. So I'm wondering if you think that because of the way the media is portraying things, especially with some of these polls that aren't necessarily accurate or paint or, you know, giving us the entire picture, because they are just a snapshot of today and it's only this small group of people. But despite all that, do you feel good about going into this election?
Yeah, I mean, I feel, of course, we should all feel stressed because we cannot allow Donald Trump to win. But yeah, I think the story of the last 3 months, I mean, it was always going to be Biden v. Trump. We know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I actually thought the media, partly because they like the drama of a primary, have always underplayed how clear it was that it was going to be Biden versus Trump. Given that, I actually think the numbers that Nikki Haley put up for the last 2 months mm-hmm. have been eye-opening. You know, 30%, 40%. Yeah. And if half of the people vote for her ultimately do not vote for Trump, and they're either independents or especially Republicans, that's probably the election right there. Yeah. And that to me is the story. Now, you got a lot mm-hmm. of work to do, obviously, mm-hmm. and take nothing for granted. But I do think there's a Trump fatigue that is getting lost in the coverage. If the Biden campaign does a good job drawing out how crazy Trump really was during the presidency, even before COVID, long before COVID. And mm-hmm. Trump, I think, one other thing I think about Trump, he's actually a much, much worse candidate than he was in, let's say, 16. Like, when he said "Make America Great Again," I mean, it's a weird way to say this, but that was somewhat forward-looking. He was going to help communities that had been left out, on and on mm-hmm. and on. His entire campaign now isn't forward-looking. It's backwards. It's mm-hmm. retribution. It's bizarre dictatorial mm-hmm. things. It's all about 2020. Like, that's why I said Biden needs to have a forward-looking vision. It's a very bizarre campaign when you think about it. And so I think Trump is a worse candidate than he was in 16 and 20. And I do think there is a fatigue. I mean, I know someone, a family friend, I'll just call him, in a rural Ohio. He's just one example, but I think it explains some of the 30 or 40% Nikki Haley is getting. My guess is this person voted for Trump for sure in 16, mm-hmm. probably in 20. He will not vote for Biden, but he tells me he can't even watch Trump on TV anymore. He changes the channel. It's too nuts. It's too crazy. And so I do think, I think Biden's got to overcome some things, but I think there's a Trump fatigue and a Trump ceiling that exists. And if you run hard and well, you really hammer that ceiling into place. And mm-hmm. and then the key is to consolidate and not allow some of those votes to go over to a RFK or something. But so no, yeah. I feel like my attitude is we have to beat Trump. But the fact that we have this truly bizarre right-wing, Dobbs-supporting candidate on the ballot of every state means we also should point out that contrast in every statehouse race, every congressional mm-hmm. race. So you do the glass half full on all this for the same reason they've lost for a year and a half, make them lose again this year, and make that loss not just that they lose the presidency again, but make it that they lose the Arizona statehouse. Or that we win the Pennsylvania Senate because they are so extreme that they're every candidate on the ballot should be worried about the IVF decision, the post-Dobbs world that's cost them. So I'm not predicting, but I'm saying that's what our mm-hmm. goal should be. Make everyone on every ballot in America own how extreme they've gotten. They've owned that in the last 2 years and they've lost mm-hmm. repeatedly because of it. Let's make that happen again this year.
Yeah. And, you know, the last time you were on my show, we talked about your book, Saving Democracy. And I just want to go back to that for a second, because especially right now, everybody's, you know, talking about engaging and getting involved. And so I wanted you to just kind of go over a few different ways voters can get involved, especially when they're not feeling comfortable knocking on doors or making phone calls. Although I just want to throw out there that, you know, as somebody, obviously I have a podcast, I have no problem talking, but when I was going to make phone calls the very first time, I felt nervous and intimidated. But it's the process is so easy. When you sign up to do it, it's all through your computer. You don't have to use your own phone. You're given basically a script so you can just say it a few times so that you feel comfortable. And you have to remember that for the most part, you're calling friendly people. You're calling, you know, registered Democrats. So I just want to throw that out there because it's like, I, you know, as some, like I said, as someone who's got a big mouth and I have my own podcast, right. I understand how it can feel intimidating. So, you know, what can voters do?
I mean, there's so much they can do. And it really depends on where you are. So what I try and say to people, wherever you are in America, you are on the front line in the battle for democracy. Don't think it's only about three or four swing states far from you. Think about in your own area, what are some pro-democracy goals you can set? You know, when I was in Oklahoma a year ago, 60% of the Oklahoma Republicans were uncontested in that state house were uncontested in November of 22. 60%,
wow.
Just like 50% of the Tennessee Republicans who kicked out the two Justins, uncontested. So what you can do in addition to, you know, trying to help Sherrod Brown win, which I hope people can do, you know, send him some support, pick another Senate race or two to help. Think about in your own space, how is democracy not doing well where you are? Well, in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. what I'd say is, try and help make sure that only 30% are uncontested. Help some of those Oklahoma mm-hmm. State House candidates run. In New York, get your turnout up so we don't lose to Santos like we did. We win like we did mm-hmm. with Suozzi. In California, they got schools to protect in Orange County, even though it feels kind of blue. So one thing mm-hmm. I would say is democracy, wherever you are, and this is what I was saying about the Biden speech, know that democracy is at stake where you are. Don't be convinced by anyone that you're not on the front line. And that all of a sudden makes it clear there's much more you can do. So there's helping candidates. There's helping on issues. Like in Ohio, we have a chance to end gerrymandering through an issue. But the other thing I'd say, this varies depending on where you live. There are certain key steps they are taking to undermine democracy. A key step in many states is suppressing the vote of largely voters of color. And so what I would say to you in your non-candidate helping mode, think about all the ways that you in life sort of think about your footprint in life of your involvement and challenge yourself to make a list. I say make a list of your footprint, not just your political party affiliation or your meetings you go to, but think about the nonprofits you may be involved in, the church group, I don't know, and think about could that institution play a role. You know, I'm a big believer that if you had every rec center, every health clinic, every food pantry, every homeless shelter, if each one of them were to sign in those mm-hmm. who come through their doors and say, are you registered? Let's register you. We would make a massive difference. So the question for anyone listening is, do you volunteer at that homeless shelter? Do you volunteer at that food pantry? Do they look like they're registering voters? If they're not, ask them why they're not, because they should be. They are serving the very people who are right now not engaged in our democracy. And because – did you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, just you said – if they're not registering voters, ask them.
If they're not registering voters, if they're not engaging voters, ask them why not. Because many of those institutions that you may be involved with are actually interacting with the very voters we need to get back into democracy. So those are just some examples.
Hey, this is Kimberly. If you're not already my patron, just visit patreon.com/startmeup. You can take a look at all the tiers and decide how you want to support the show. Thank you so much. Okay, so I want to ask you, okay, I ask everybody this question, but I just want to see what you have to say. So obviously it would be better for voters if any kind of trial happens before this election. But as days keep going on, it doesn't look like there's going to be a trial for Donald Trump.
Right.
So there's not going to be a conviction. And there are some people who feel like if that doesn't happen, that's it. Everything's over. I'm not one of them. I still think, I mean, I'm looking at the numbers right now, and for the most part, I think we're doing pretty well, but like, do you think it's going to be enough if we don't see him convicted that he could lose?
I've been saying this for a year. The courts are not going to save us.
Right.
It's a tragedy. It is not a rule of law to make the voters vote out insurrectionists. The courts mm-hmm. should actually bring accountability to them before the next election. We have a lot of thinking to do about what is wrong with our overall system, that in our country you can try and overturn an election and the trial that holds you accountable for it does not occur until after the next mm-hmm. election. Think about how screwed up the incentive system is. I mean, Donald Trump is essentially running to avoid accountability for the last insurrection. And because he knows that if he doesn't win, he'll probably go to jail at least, you know, and be maybe not be disqualified, but go to jail. That means he has no incentive to not do everything in his power to win this next election because mm-hmm. he's very much screwed if he doesn't. So we have to fix that. But what I've been saying for the last 9 months is that's a tragedy. We have a lot of soul searching in this country to figure out why this mm-hmm. has happened. But courts are not going to save us. We are going to have to do it ourselves as voters. It shouldn't be that way, but it is. And here's to answer your question. We can do that. He is mm-hmm. such a flawed candidate. There are ways in TV ads to draw out his crimes, even if a jury didn't find them yet. From the massive suits he's had to pay hundreds of millions for, to the other actions. We all watched January 6th. I don't know if those are necessarily the winning issues to mm-hmm. win the campaign. I mean, in the end, what he said about taking credit for the end of Dobbs may still be the most impactful thing right. to run on.
Yeah.
But we can make the case as to why he shouldn't be president either way. So it's as a lawyer who cares about a rule of law, I'm horrified. But mm-hmm. as a political person thinking, can we win without it? First, we're going to have to. And mm-hmm. secondly, yes, we can. We absolutely can. And you just think about him as a candidate. Again, he's such a deeply flawed candidate versus even 2016. I think we have to remind people how much he flubbed COVID. But I also mm-hmm. think we have to start – I'm going to do a little bit about this myself in the next couple weeks. We have to start showing people the freedoms – and other things they value, they will lose if Trump wins. Mm-hmm. This is partly Trump versus Biden, but it's also Trump versus you and your mm-hmm. freedoms. And if he wins, which freedoms are you okay accepting going away? Because there are going to be some going away. He's mm-hmm. promising it. And I think we have to start making that kind of consequence clear. And all of a sudden, I think you do that, he becomes a very bad candidate.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, going back to 2016, nobody, you know, that people were only familiar with him because of his, you know, wealth celebrity and The Apprentice.
Right.
So they were just thinking, oh, okay, well, he's a businessman, so we're just going to, you know, bring that back. We're going to bring that to the White House. And, okay, we did. We saw what happened when we brought Donald Trump to the White House. And I think we saw what happened in 2020. Joe Biden got more than 7 million votes over Donald Trump. Correct. So, yeah, now he's campaigning. This is his third time around. And, you know, they're going after Biden for his age. Yes, Biden is old. So is Donald. But right. the thing with Donald is that aside from him being old, he's clearly, you know, one of the things I was talking about this with my mom and I posted about it. But, you know, she said, because I call people the wrong name. My father is constantly calling me my sister's name. I mean, it happens all the time, and he's been doing it since his 30s,
right.
and so or 40s, I should say. And it's one thing when you confuse names; it's another thing when you confuse people. And Donald Trump has been confusing people. And then, you know, during his rallies the other day, he said something. I can't remember what he was talking about. Saudi Arabia. I don't know what he was talking about. But whatever, he said something, and then he just completely could not form the word.
Right.
And it just kind of like, and then he made this noise like almost like he realized that he flubbed that word and it was painful for him. I don't know why he made that noise, but whatever. So we're seeing this man who is just falling apart. It's you know, he wasn't falling apart in 2016. He's falling right. apart now because he's my personal theory is, aside from all the pressure he's under and, you know, all of the indictments and all that, you know, he's been on drugs for a very long time. At least that's what we've been hearing. And so if that's the case, and we do know he takes certain kinds of drugs. A lot of people in their 70s are taking drugs for one thing or another, you know, just by your doctor. We've heard that he takes Adderall. But there's a number of things, and I'm not saying he does, I'm just saying we've heard it, but I think that he does, and I think that for a while those drugs were keeping him going, and I think now they're starting to basically tear him down. So I think, you know, it's a combination of both. So he is not the same candidate at all.
Yeah, and there's,
but, yeah, go ahead.
The one thing I'd say, I ran into a guy, I was in Southern Ohio the other day, a very red conservative area, totally Republican. And I ran into a Democratic judge, and this was an elected judge. And I said to him, wow, I'm really impressed that you're a Democrat in this county. Elected. A county Trump probably won 70-30. And he said to me, oh, I came in on the Trump wave. I said, you did as a Democrat? He goes, yeah, because in 16, in this part of Ohio, he was not viewed as partisan at all. He was anti-establishment. Well, I also was anti-establishment, running against establishment Republican, so Trump voters voted for me. And it was a really interesting insight that I think in a lot of America, he was so different in 16.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't viewed as an extremist, a Republican extremist. He was anti-establishment. He was just an outsider in the same way a Democrat in the Republican area was. And I think to the extent he's now caught up having, you know, ended Dobbs and ended Roe v. Wade,
yeah.
I think now he's on the extreme conservative right in a way that some people didn't, like you just said, they didn't see him that way necessarily in 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, makes him a worse candidate when he was a little bit above party in 16 in a way that we might not have seen. And even when that guy said to me, I thought, gosh, I never had heard it that way. This guy said it like it was absolutely accepted narrative that in a lot of parts of this country – he was not seen as that partisan. He was seen as a business guy who was anti-establishment. Mm-hmm. And I think that appeal was broader than his appeal is now.
Yes, exactly. That is so true. And now the last thing I want to bring up is we're seeing, you know, the New York Times and Reuters and Politico doing pieces that are not pointing out his extremism.
Yeah.
They're kind of just focusing on Joe Biden's age or saying Joe Biden is in trouble. And, you know, one of the main complaints that I've seen is we've seen all the Trump voters and all the diners and we hear about how they feel about the economy. Whether or not it's true, that's what we hear. But we're not hearing from Joe Biden voters. They're not going to diners and interviewing people who are really supporting Joe Biden. So I'm just... what do you make of this reporting, and how do you think it's going to affect the election?
Yeah, it's obviously very frustrating, and it does shape it. I think they need to see that that's what's happening. And just like Ronald Reagan ended it pretty quickly with his one Mondale quip, I think they need to figure out how do they take the Joe Biden from last year's State of the Union – where you couldn't watch that speech and not think he's still pretty spry, he's still got some oomph there, and figure out how to get it out there. So, it's only March. By June or July, the goal should be, hey, let's introduce Joe Biden so people are thinking, boy, isn't it funny that only a few months ago they were saying this guy was too old to run, just like they said that about Reagan until he destroyed Mondale in that debate. So I think the State of the Union, I think other opportunities are there to come up with creative ways. But part of it, by the way, does involve, and I'm not an insider, so I they obviously don't hear me on this, but I do think when you hide someone too much, it does confirm that narrative. So to the extent they can get him out there being real, at the risk of having a few gaffes, but get him out there being real, showing that he's still got it. I mean, I thought he looked pretty strong the other night. He was on one of the late night shows. Was it Seth Meyers?
Yes.
Yeah, he looked great. I mean, it was fun. It was funny. I would say do that. You have to disrupt that narrative. The New York Times isn't going to disrupt it themselves. So give them a new story. And the new story has to be the guy that we were all saying was too old a few months ago. Boy, does he seem like a new guy. It's funny that we used to think that. Just like they give Reagan credit for destroying the age, you know, thing that he faced in one line of a debate.
Right.
So turn it upside down. I mean, it's easy for me to say that, but that has to be the goal. Just getting mad. My guess is they're calling the papers, too, saying, would you stop doing that? They're not going to. You have to break it up yourself. And then I would say, just like the, you know, and then do a very – and they'll do this part well. Take every ridiculous, insane thing that Trump says, or worse, things that he – like you said, he screws up, and expose it all. make it clear that this guy isn't just aging. He's moving into a different category of losing something that you don't want a president not to, you know. I don't know when Trump started to kind of go off the rails and not remember stuff, but it's clearly very noticeable now, and I think they need to be very aggressive about that as well, as you just described.
Yeah, and Bob Seska, my boyfriend, had said some, you know, he thinks part of what they're doing is because they want to look like, they don't want to look like they're being nice to the sitting president or something. And it's like, okay, fine, but they're going and they're ignoring some really key things that are happening with Trump.
Right.
And so that's the disturbing part of it. But anyway, well, David, it's always really good talking to you. I know you've got a busy schedule. So first of all, thank you for stopping by and sharing your wisdom. And before I let you go, please tell everyone where to find you.
So I'm quite active on Twitter at David Pepper. I'm on all the other things too. But the place, if you really want to hear from me directly, I did start once Elon Musk took over Twitter, I needed sort of a escape plan for people who were leaving. So I created a Substack. And I think if you look up David Pepper, I call it Pepperspectives, but go there as well, because I share, you know, just like I do in my books, a lot of things pretty much every day on all this stuff. So David Pepper, Twitter, Substack are probably the two best ways to hear from me.
Perfect. And then I'm Author Kimberly on Twitter. I have a pinned tweet, and that tells you everywhere. I have a link tree so that you can find me on all the sites. Again, David, thank you so much. This was great talking to you.
Of course. Great catching up.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.